Good morning. You're now tuned to the CWA Civil Rights Talk Show, An Hour of Power. Now here's your host, the incomparable Errol Miner.
Good morning, human rights activists all over the world. Welcome back to the Communication Workers of America, CWA, Human Rights Hour Power, Justice Field Hour of Talk, Solidarity, and Worker Power right here on KYOK 1140 AM and the all-new 106.5 FM. If you are visiting the beautiful city of Houston, you can take us home with you on kyokradio.org. Thank you for joining us on the CWA Human Rights Hour Power Radio Show this morning. It's about us. That's right. It's about us. Working agreements, solidarity, living wages, worker power, and simply human rights. Honk your horns if you're supporting workers. That's right. Honk those horns if you are supporting workers. We have a phenomenal show lineup with you this morning with Mykia Jones, Sir Reginald Small, and Timia Wiley. So don't you dare change that dial. Tune in this morning because we will be talking about the devastation by Hurricane Milton in Florida, National Bullying Prevention Month, Union Buster of the Week, the Nigel Shelby Foundation founder, Miss Kamika Shelby, spotlighting our on and even our power trivia. Wake up, everybody. No more sleeping in bed. Our union voices are ringing in every district from Alaska to Maine, Texas to Minnesota, Canada to Puerto Rico, because we don't play at CWA. Our union brothers and sisters and siblings at the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette have been outside for 20 months striking on the picket lines. And yet, while they are striking, they are still churning out the news with facts for you and me. And let's continue to show our support to them by making sure we subscribe to unionprogress.com. Once you subscribe to this free publication, how about going over and donating to their strike fund at cwa.org/PPG-donate. And somewhere I just heard someone say, when we fight, we win. Our brothers, sisters, and siblings at Maximus are still fighting for a contract. We ask that you continue to support the workers of Maximus and their families by going over to cwa.org/CCW Solidarity Fund. You are tuned into KYOK 1140 AM and the all new 106.5 FM. If you're on the go, you can take us with you on kyokradio.org. Miles Horton, often referred to as the Radical Hillbilly, was an American educator, activist, and co-founder of the Highlander Folk School, now the Highlander Research and Education Center, an institution that played a critical role in social justice movements, particularly labor organizing and the civil rights movement. Horton was born in rural Tennessee, and his experiences growing up in poverty in Appalachia shaped his commitment to fighting for rights of marginalized people, especially workers and oppressed communities in the South. He founded Highlander in 1932 with the vision of creating a space where grassroots leaders could be educated and empowered to fight for economic and social justices. Horton initially focused on labor organizing, helping workers gain skills to advocate for their rights, particularly during the rise of industrial unions in the 1930s and 40s. Highlander served as a training ground for labor leaders, including those in the Congress of Industrial Organizations, which we all know is CIO. In the 1950s and 60s, Highlander became a critical hub for civil rights training. Horton and the school hosted key figures like Rosa Parks, Martin Luther King, John Lewis, and Ella Baker. Highlander was instrumental in developing nonviolent protest strategies and fostering leadership in desegregation and voting rights efforts. Horton's educational philosophy was based on the idea of popular education, or education for empowerment. He believed in fostering critical thinking and collective action by encouraging people to analyze their own conditions and take leadership in their own struggles. His methods were based on dialogue, participation, and respect for the knowledge of ordinary people. Horton was seen as radical because he challenged the status quo in the segregated South and advocated for systemic change. He embraced interracial cooperation and community-based empowerment in a time and place where such ideas were considered subversive. He also believed that social change should come from the bottom up rather than being imposed by the elites or institutions. His commitment to grassroots activism, labor rights, and racial equality earned him the nickname Radical Hillbilly, reflecting both his rural roots and his transformative vision for the South and beyond. The Highlander Folk School was a its core purpose was to empower marginalized communities through education and promote social, economic, and racial justice. Kids of its movement included labor movement support. Initially, Highlander focused on supporting labor unions and the rights of workers in the South, providing education on labor organizing, collective bargaining, and leadership development. It helped organize strikes and train labor leaders. In the 50s and 60s, the school became a critical hub for those civil rights movement. It played a key role in the training of civil rights activists, as I said before. And Highlander embraced the philosophy of popular education, which emphasized learning from the experiences of ordinary people. Throughout its history, Highlander was dedicated to promoting democracy and fighting racial, economic, and social oppression. The school later was renamed Highlander Research and Education Center, and it continues its work today, focusing on issues of environmental justice, immigrant rights, and economic equality. Horton's involvement in the civil rights fight, especially his support for racial integration and equality, made Highlander a target of segregationists and government authorities. The school was investigated, harassed, and even temporarily shut down by the state of Tennessee in 1961. Accused of being a communist training ground, however, Horton's commitment to social justice did not waver. Despite these challenges, Highlander remained a symbol of interracial cooperation and grassroots empowerment. Horton's radical vision for change, anchored in the belief of that the oppressed should lead their own struggles, played a critical role in shaping the civil rights movement. Miles Horton's legacy as the radical hillbilly is one of a visionary educator who believed that ordinary people, through education and collective action, could change the world. His contributions to the civil rights movement helped transform the American South and challenge the entrenched system of racial segregation. We salute the radical hillbilly, Miles Horton. You're tuned into KYOK 1140 AM and the all new 106.5 FM. If you're on the go, you can take us with you on kyokradio.org. Up next is Makia Jones and National Bullying Prevention Month. Good morning, Makia.
Good morning, Aaron. Good morning, KYOK radio listeners. I felt that it was really important to shine a light on this particular subject this month because it's something that impacts all of us, and I don't think that it gets the attention that it needs. So like Aaron mentioned, October is National Bullying Prevention Month, and it's a timely reminder for everyone to take action in their local communities to foster a safe and supportive environment for everyone. It's an ideal time to examine some of the crucial factors surrounding this hot button issue, because bullying touches families from coast to coast and in all demographic areas. The more we can shed a light on it and learn to understand it, the better equipped we will be as a nation to help prevent it from happening again. And bullying again is an issue that most of us have to deal with at some point in one way or another. And we need to learn about it, and we need to know what we can do to take action to prevent it in our homes, in our schools, our communities, in our workplaces. So according to the American Psychological Association, bullying is a form of aggressive behavior in which someone intentionally and repeatedly causes another person injury or discomfort. And this can happen in multiple ways, including words, physical contact, threats, etc. But bullying can be done online and in person. So here's just a few facts about bullying during Bullying Prevention Month. So one, your child will most likely be impacted if you have children. So consider how many children are impacted by bullying. There's a chance that your child will be bullied as well. And whether they're bullied or the one that's bullying or they're witnessing it, it's going to touch their lives in some way. Second thing is more people need to get involved. We as society cannot expect schools to do it all regarding bullying. There's only so much that they can do, and they have a lot of students to monitor. Plus, students only spend a certain amount of time at school, and the rest of the time they're at home in their communities, online, wherever, and we all need to do our parts into stopping it and preventing it. And many kids suffer from silent bullying. Some kids tell their parents they're being bullied, and there are many more who suffer in silence. Parents and teachers need to learn that all they can do about the issue and to watch for and stand up for those who may feel like they can't speak up. And, you know, sometimes parents may be contributing to the problem. And this is sobering for a lot of people to hear because some parents don't want to realize or recognize that they're contributing to the issue. Some form of parenting created bullying. Even when it's unintentional, there are consequences. And numerous studies have found that particular parenting styles can contribute to create bullying, including something that was published in the Infirmia Clinica Journal, which found that authoritarian parenting is related to bullying, which is a parenting style that focuses on strict rules, high expectations, and little flexibility. And then there's also workplace bullying, whether through hostile comments, discriminatory actions, or other forms of intimidation. It's an issue as well, and it shouldn't be tolerated. And one of the biggest forms of bullying that I believe today that's super impactful is cyberbullying. And cyberbullying is the use of technology to harass, threaten, embarrass, or target another person. Online threats and mean, aggressive, or rude texts, tweets, posts, or messages all count. And so does posting personal information, pictures, or videos designed to hurt or embarrass someone else. Cyberbullying also includes photos, messages, or pages that don't get taken down even after the person has been asked to do so. So in other words, it's anything that gets posted online is meant to hurt, harass, or upset someone else. And online bullying can be particularly damaging and upsetting because it's usually anonymous or hard to trace. It's also hard to control, and the person being victimized has no idea how many people or how many hundreds or thousands of people have seen the message or the post. And people can be tormented nonstop whenever they check their device or computer. Sometimes online bullying, like other kinds of bullying, can lead to serious long-lasting problems. And the stress of being in a constant state of upset or fear can lead to problems with mood, energy level, sleep, and appetite. It can also make someone feel jumpy, anxious, or sad. And if someone is already depressed or anxious, cyberbullying can make things much worse. Students who are cyberbullied can struggle to concentrate in school, which can affect how well they do there or worse. So by promoting kindness, inclusivity, and respect, we can contribute to creating a society where everyone feels valued and respected. And together, we have the power to make bullying a thing of the past and build a more compassionate world. So this month, in conjunction with Breast Cancer Awareness and Filipino Heritage, in Hispanic Heritage, it's important to understand that this month is National Bullying Prevention Month, and we need to do all that we can to make everyone feel safe. Back to you, Errol.
Thank you so much, Maikia Jones, for reporting on National Bullying Prevention Month. You are listening to CWA Our Power on KYOK 1140 AM and the all-new 106.5 FM. If you're on the go, you can take us with you on kyokradio.org. Wake up, everybody. No more sleeping in bed. Turn the volume up just a little bit louder to hear the Union Buster of the Week with Timia Wally. Good morning, Timia.
Good morning, Errol. Good morning, KYOK listeners. Good morning, Saints. And good morning, AIDS. Today, we're going to talk about our Union Buster, but we're going to put another spin on it because we want you to think about yourself. Are you a Union Buster? And by saying that, we're going to talk about voting, your voting strategy, your voting plan, your myths that you may have about voter registration and the importance of voting, because your vote is powerful. It's just like the money in your pocket. The way that you vote can sway how people are treated on the job, how unions are able to play in our society and help raise the living standard for many people. So we're going to start with developing a voting strategy. and how that can help you make informed decisions and maximize your impact at the polls. Here are a few steps to consider. First, you want to research candidates and issues. You want to look into candidates' platforms, their past performances, and specific issues at the ballot. Use reliable sources. Again, I'm going to say reliable because there's a whole lot of misinformation going around on social media and other platforms. So you really want to take a look at nonpartisan websites that are there to level the playground and the playing field so that you can get the correct information. Number two, we want you to understand local and state races. How many times have you went to vote and there are people on the ballot that you have no idea who they are or what they stand for? This is where your local and state races come into play. These are some of the most important races that are out there to vote on. Number three, we want you to identify your priorities. What's important to you? We want you to, before you get to the polls, determine which issues are most important to you, whether it be healthcare, education, climate change, and see what candidate aligns with your values. Number three, we want you to identify your priorities. Once you identify what's important to you, make sure you make a note of that. Make sure you go back to your nonpartisan websites and your nonpartisan information to find out who aligns with you locally. We want you to engage with your community. Discuss issues with friends, family, community members to gain different perspectives. Visit your local community forums or town halls. They are very helpful. They are a great way to be able to ask questions and be able to hear for yourself, not get information from social media. You're going to want to consider all voting methods. Decide whether you'll vote in person, by mail, or use early voting. All of these are great and valid ways to vote, but we want you to make sure you have a concrete plan of how you're going to vote this fall. We also want you to know your voting rights. Familiarize yourself with your rights as a voter and the specific regulations in your area, including ID requirements, if there are any, and deadlines. We want you to participate in voter outreach. If you feel strongly about certain issues or candidates, consider getting involved in their campaign or voter registration efforts. Those getting involved and helping is invaluable when it comes to learning more about the candidate that you are supporting and getting the word out, because it could be anything from door knocking. You could be folding letters to go in the mail. You could be phone banking. There's so many ways that you can get involved and help your candidates. Another thing for you to keep in mind is we want you to evaluate the impact of your vote. Think about how your vote can influence not just the outcome, but also future elections and policies. So don't think just about yourself. Think about the generations behind you. Think about how your vote is going to affect future policies, future laws in your area. And finally, we want you to stay informed after voting. Once you cast a ballot, your job still isn't finished. You have to continue to follow the outcomes and the performance of the elected officials and hold them accountable. Because we all know that elected officials can sometimes be conflicted. And sometimes you might need to be that voice to unconflict them. And I don't know if that's a word, but I'm using it. We want to unconflict them and make sure they stay on topic with what's important to you. Just a few more things about creating your voting plan that we want you to keep fresh and in the front of your mind is to check your registration status. Make sure you're registered to vote, check your status online, and admonish somebody else. Just, you have the information now. When you know better, you do better. Make sure you speak to other people about checking their registration status. There's no excuse to show up on election day and not have your registration ready to go. We also want you to think about your voting method, which is going to be in-person voting or mail-in voting. It is very important. I can't stress this enough to have this a part of your voting plan. Some people don't want to wait in line on election day. That's something to keep in mind. The lines on election day could be pretty long. So if you have early voting, maybe that's something you want to take advantage of. And you want to mark your calendar. Once you decide how you're going to vote, make sure you mark your calendar and plan your transportation route. See if there's somebody else that you can ride with or if can ride with you. Make it a day. Make it a lunch date. Make it fun. But make sure that you are there. Most importantly, make sure that you are there. And finally, we want you to review your voting materials. Grab a sample ballot offline or pick one up from your local polling station. Make sure you know up and down the ballot who's on there, what they stand for, and who you should be voting for. And I'm going to say this is finally, vote. Make sure you get out to vote. I cannot stress this enough. Vote. Make sure you engage others with your voting. Shout it to the rooftops if you have to. Make sure people get out to vote. This is a critical election, and we need everyone to get out to vote. So now I'm going to pivot just a little bit, and we're going to talk about some voting myths. So the people that you're speaking with about voting, they may have some voting myths in their head that keep them from voting. So myth number one, you must register to vote in every election. The fact is, once you've registered, you typically remain registered as long as you continue to vote in elections and keep your information up to date. However, some states may require re-registration if you move or change your name. Myth number two, voter registration is only necessary for first-time voters. The fact is, all voters need to register regardless of whether they have voted in previous elections. Changes in address or name require re-registration. So if you've moved or you changed your name, you've gotten married, you've gotten unmarried, and you're going back to your married name, please check your registration status. You may have to re-register. Myth number three, you can't register to vote if you have a criminal record. The fact is, laws vary by state, but many allow individuals with felony convictions to register to vote after serving their sentence, including parole and probation. Myth number four, voter registration is the same as being automatically registered to vote. The fact is, voter registration typically requires a separate process. Some states have automatic registration systems, but some do not do that at all. This is where you need to familiarize with your voter rights and voter registration in your area. Another myth is too late to register to vote just before an election. The fact is, registration deadlines vary by state, and some states allow same-day registration, enabling you to register and vote on the same day. Myth number seven, you don't need to register if you vote by mail. The fact is, you still need to be registered to vote by mail. Mail-in voting requires prior registration in most states. My last myth of the day is your vote doesn't matter, so there's no point in registering. Every vote counts, and local elections can be decided by a very small number of votes. Registered voters have the power to influence outcomes of the election. So we need everybody, I'm gonna say that again, we need everybody to get out to vote. If you don't get out to vote, I'm gonna have to call you a union buster. It's just plain and simple as that. Yep, I said it. If you do not get out to vote, you are a union buster. And I'm gonna send it back to you, Errol. Thank you.
And I'm gonna chime in real quick before she's done, just to give you all some quick information, because it's important to know that we are exactly 25 days, 13 hours, 35 minutes, and 19 seconds away from election day. Okay? 25 days, 13 hours, 35 minutes, and now 13 seconds away from election day. So don't forget to vote, like she said.
All right. Thank you so much, Timia and Mykia. Timia with Voting Buster of the Week. You are listening to the CWA Hour Power Hour on KYOK 1140 AM and the all-new 106.5 FM. If you're on the go, you can take us with you on kyokradio.org. This morning, we have another guest in our studio audience, and that is Miss Kamika Shelby. October is the month when awareness is raised about bullying. And on the CWA Our Power Radio Show, we have Miss Kamika Shelby, the founder of the Nigel Shelby Foundation and the mother of Nigel Shelby, whose life ended too soon due to bullying in the Huntsville school systems. Welcome, Miss Shelby, and we are so glad to have you with us this morning.
Good morning, you guys, and thank you for having me. I'm honored to be here.
I want to give a great big shout out, first of all, to the Birmingham, Alabama Metro Professional Alumni Chapter of the Academia Society Incorporated, who were very instrumental and had you on last week and very instrumental in us getting together and bringing you on the CWA Our Power Radio Show. First of all, I want to just say thank you so much for being so nice and welcoming us into your world and to everything that is going on in your world, because you did not have to allow us to come into your life. But I just want to thank you, and I just want to say thank you for the conversation that we had on Saturday. I think we kept each other longer than we had anticipated. We had about an hour long conversation, but I want to thank you for opening up and allowing us in. And to get into the story of your son, the first question that I want to ask you this morning is, how are you feeling at the moment? How is your mental, spiritual, and physical well-being?
Well, I can honestly say I am in a pretty good space mentally, physically, spiritually. Like, of course, it's been 5 years since I lost him. And as time go by, I heal a little more. Now, the pain never goes away. You know, I have my moments still where it gets overwhelming. Sometimes I'll relive that day over and over again. But overall, I can actually say I'm in the best space that I have been in since it happened.
Mm-hmm. Well, let me get you to introduce yourself to the audience a little bit. Maybe they are not familiar with the story. So will you introduce yourself to the listening audience?
I will. So, of course, I'm the mother of Nigel Shelby. In 2019, I come home from work to find my son unresponsive. One of the worst days of my life. You know, I did what I needed to do, which was call the ambulance. You know, they transported him to the hospital. In the end, he did not make it. Reliving that day is always like the hardest for me, because even 5 years later, I still remember some of the smallest details as if it just happened yesterday, like the rain. The rain is something I will never forget. It rained so hard all the way to the hospital. It's certain moments, certain smells, certain sounds about that day that I will never forget. And even 5 years later, if I come in contact with that smell or that sound or anything that's, you know, a reminiscence of that day, it takes me to a sad place. Nigel's story, I'm still not even sure how his story went so viral so fast, but it did. And when that happened, it was kind of like a gift and a curse. It was a gift because it brought national attention to the things that were going on in his life that I was even aware of. But it was almost a curse because I didn't necessarily have the proper time I needed to grieve, because I was instantly pushed into the limelight. So it was a gift and a curse. Now, 5 years later, I completely focus on the positive. I try not to dwell on the negative. I try not to dwell on his actual suicide. Instead, I try to focus on the opportunities that it brought about for me to be able to bring change, for me to be able to help other parents that may be dealing with children of the LGBT community that may be dealing with mental issues, that may, you know, be bullied in school. It brought about a lot of opportunities for me to be able to just help. So nowadays, I try to focus more on that.
Okay. Well, let me ask this, because I know people, you probably get the same questions over and over when you are telling the story, but I want to find out more about Nigel. Would you share a little bit more about Nigel's childhood? What was he like? Was he a difficult child, or was he a loving child? Do you mind sharing that with us?
No, I don't mind at all. I can't help but when anyone, no matter who it is, asks me about Nigel, I can't help but to smile so brightly, because this child was just amazing. Like, he had the best sense of humor. He was always laughing and joking. Nigel was very talented. Like, he could dance. He loved to sing. Like, Nigel was just such light. Of course, there were dark moments that he went through in, you know, his teenage years, having to deal with figuring out his sexuality, you know, dealing with the bullying in school. He did go through dark stages, but overall throughout his life, Nigel was just such a light to anybody that he was around. Like, he brought out the happiness in you. You could be having a terrible day, and 5 minutes with Nigel, you're laughing and smiling. He was just that joyful.
Mm-hmm. So what do you remember most about Nigel? That his, small little thing that you really
his
miss?
Laugh. Mm-hmm. His laugh was so, it was just, I don't know, it was something about his laugh. Even now, it's like sometimes I could just hear that laugh in my ear. It was just so joyful and so cute and so innocent.
Mm-hmm. Now, I know that we are on KYOK 1140 AM radio. It's a gospel station. And a lot of times people don't, they kind of hold back. But I have a question. When all of this happened, and was there ever a time that you were mad at God?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Can you tell us about that?
I definitely can. In the beginning. Okay, let me explain a little bit where this anger come from. Nigel had been Can you guys hear me?
Yes.
Okay, Nigel had just been experiencing like a darkness around him that it was very noticeable. He started to not want to go outside with his friends, and he was sad a lot. He was dealing with real deep depression. And once I started noticing this, then I tried to take action. I would, you know, take him to see therapists, counselors, whatever I felt I needed to do to try to help him, I was doing that. The morning of his death, I remember getting up for work. I got myself together as I normally do. And before I got in my car, I put my head down and I prayed. And I asked God, whatever my baby is going through, please take away his pain. Release him from this misery. God, just wrap your arms around my child and help him through whatever it is he's going through.
Mm-hmm.
Later on that day, I would find my child unresponsive. I was pissed at God. I remember me screaming like, God, this is not what I asked you for. I asked you to heal my baby. I did not ask you to take him away from me. So I was angry at God for a while. I stopped praying. I lost my faith. I was terrified to pray because I felt God is confusing my prayers. He's giving me not what I asked for, but well, in reality, it kind of was what I asked for. It just wasn't the way that I asked. And so because of that, for a long time, I didn't have faith anymore. I was mad at God. I didn't want to talk to him. I didn't understand it. I was just angry. So yeah, losing him, it definitely questioned my faith.
We understand. Now, and I know it has been some time that has passed 5 years, but one of the things that I want to ask you is, in the midst of everything, have you found moments of peace even for a short time?
Yes.
Okay.
I can say the biggest moment of peace was writing this book. It was a moment of peace. I wrote a book called A Need for Nigel, and the book was kind of like therapy for me. I put my raw emotions. It actually took about 2 or 3 years for me to complete the book because in the beginning, I would get so overwhelmed that my anxiety would take over and I couldn't move forward. In the end, the solution that was found was for me to just record every thought that I was having and then just put it all together. And that's kind of how I was able to complete it. But that book gave me a sense of peace because finally I could let it all out. Being that I went through a whole litigation process, there were times where I would do speaking engagements and people would ask me questions and I wanted to answer, but I couldn't because of the legal battle that I was going through. So finally in the book, any and every question that I could think of that someone had asked me previously that I couldn't answer, I answered it in the book. So that book brought me so much peace. It allowed me to get it all out the way I wanted to get it out, say it in the way I wanted to say it. And that brought me so much peace.
Mm-hmm. And as we were talking the other day, when we were talking about your book, A Need for Nigel, and for the listening audience, if you want a copy of A Need for Nigel, you can go to the NigelShelbyFoundation.org and support by purchasing the book, A Need for Nigel. It's on their website, the NigelShelbyFoundation.org. Now, one of the things that when we were talking earlier, we had gotten to a point in our conversation where you shared some things with me and I I asked you the question, has there ever been a time that you were hesitant to share or talk about various things?
Yes. And for one, I've always been a little hesitant because of fear of judgment. Like, mm-hmm. I know now, looking back, that there are things that I could have done different as a parent. And I was afraid to admit to that out of fear of judgment. It makes me think about a story like 2 or 3 days after I lost Nigel. Nigel had a journal. He literally talked about his suicide in this journal. He also basically left me instructions, because that's exactly what it was, of what he wanted to happen after he was no longer here. And I wanted to honor his last request. And one of those requests was for me to go on his Instagram page and thank the people that he felt like was truly there for him. And mm-hmm. I've done that. And I received so much backlash. There's this one comment that just sticks in my head, to where someone was like, "He's gone to hell now. Just get over it." This is 3 days after I lost my baby. And it was things like that that would make me hesitant about what I wanted to share and didn't want to share, because people in the world is so cruel. But then I also started to see that me sharing these things and these experiences, it was helping people. I would be messaged from different kids. I had some parents to reach out, but it was like so many kids from all over the world that was just like, "This is really helping me. Like, continue to share Nigel's story, continue to post about Nigel, continue to tell us your experiences, because it's helping me." And once I realized that my baby's story is really making a difference, all of that fear of the judgment, it went away.
Mm-hmm. So what made you create the Nigel Shelby Foundation?
I just want to help. Like,
mm-hmm.
the thought of another parent having to lose their child the way I lost mine, it hurts so bad. The thought of another child experiencing such darkness that Nigel did, it hurts me so bad. And so I'm like, I just want to turn Nigel's story from something so tragic and something so sad to something that's full of love, to something that's full of light, to something mm-hmm. that's full of help. I want to be able to create a safe space for kids like Nigel when they feel like they don't have one. I want to create a safe space for parents like me that feel like they may not have one. I want to try to help parents whose kids may be experiencing same-sex sexuality, and those parents don't really understand it. They wasn't brought up to accept it, or whatever the case be. I just want to kind of bridge that gap.
And what you all, and so you're taking the foundation and making it a welcoming space for all parents as well as children, correct?
Correct, yes.
Okay. Because go ahead, I'm sorry.
I was just going to say, there are a lot of parents that have issues with truly accepting who their kids are, because that's how they were raised. And my whole thing is, we're brought up and taught that God is of love, and there shouldn't be a limit on God's love. So I don't I don't truly get people that say they believe in God and they have this strong faith in God, but yet they practice this hate for a certain individual because they don't understand their mentality or their feelings or their thoughts. So I just want to create a space that's free of judgment and that will kind of help guide parents and kids through those dark times that they might be experiencing.
Now, since you have created the foundation, I have a couple more questions and then we'll wrap the segment up and then direct people to the foundation's website so they can learn more about the website. Have you focused on developing scholarships or anything?
Yes. Okay. A big part of the foundation, I wanted to help kids, you know, be able to get or further their education. So mm-hmm. I do have on this foundation where kids that want to apply for this scholarship, they can write an essay, you know, and I'll read the essays. And if they're one of the ones that's chosen, then we'll, you know, help them with whatever they need as far as going to college, mm-hmm. like financial help, basically whatever it is they need mm-hmm. to further mm-hmm. their education. Yes.
Is there a particular grade point average they must have?
I want to say I can't remember if it was a 3.0 or a 3.5, but it is actually in the details. It'll, okay. you know, tell you what is required for you to be able to apply and things like that.
Okay. All right. Michelle, but thank you so much for being with us this morning on the CWA Human Rights Hour Power. To the listening radio audience, if you want to find out more about the Nigel Shelby Foundation, please go to the NigelShelbyFoundation.org. Thank you so much for being with us this morning, Ms. Shelby.
No, thank you so much for having me. Like any time that I can shine a little light on Nigel's love, I'm so for that. So thank you for having me.
All right. Thank you so much. And you have a wonderful day. And if you can stay on, please do so. You're listening to the Communications Workers of America, CWA Human Rights Hour Power, a justice-filled hour of talk, solidarity, and worker power right here on KYOK 1140 AM and the all-new 106.5 FM. And if you're on the go, you can take us with you on KYOKRadio.org. Up next is Our Power Trivia with Mykia Jones.
Thank you, Errol. We have to do things a little bit differently this week because last week somebody was cheating behind the scenes. So we're going to have a rematch between Reginald and Timia today for trivia to kind of quell the rumors here. So again, the rules are simple. I'm going to ask a trivia question. Your name is your buzzer. If you think you know the answer to the question, you'll say your name and I'll call on you. You have the opportunity to answer the question. You answer the trivia question correctly, then you win the point. If you answer it incorrectly, then your opponent has a chance to come and steal the point. Are you both ready?
Ready. Ready.
All right. Question number one. In which month is Breast Cancer Awareness Month
observed? Reginald.
Reginald.
Timia.
Reginald already called his name. Go ahead, Reginald.
We can't hear you. He's not playing.
Okay, so Timia, your turn.
What was the question again? Wait.
It's October. Thank you very much.
Okay, one for Reginald. Next question. True or false? Voter registration is
Timia. False. Voter registration is not mandatory in all states.
Okay.
That wasn't the full question, but I'm going to be gracious today. These people are desperate.
All right, next question. In what year was the first Breast Cancer Awareness Month celebrated?
Reginald.
Ooh, Errol, who? I don't know.
Tamia.
We all know it was Reginald, and it was 1985 for the listening audience.
That I came from the South, from North Carolina, in District 3. Thank you.
All right, we're gonna just say two and two right now. All right, it's the last question. Which amendment to the U.S. Constitution granted women the right to vote?
Reginald.
Tamia.
I heard Reginald first.
Boo.
That would be the 19th Amendment.
Okay, folks, there you have it. Reginald won twice in 2 weeks.
We're my boom never gonna, buzzer.
We're never going to be able to hear the end of this. I don't know. Back to you, Errol.
I don't know if I need to I don't know if I need to hang around after the radio show today, because I'm sure we're going to get an earful about this today.
That was a knockout, Bill. Truly.
You got a TKO? Is that what you're trying to say? As we come down to the final minutes of the show, our union brothers, sisters, and siblings at the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette have been outside for 20 months on the picket lines, and yet while they are striking, they are still churning out the news with facts for you and me. Let's show our support to them by making sure we subscribe to unionprogress.com. Once you subscribe to this free publication, how about going over and donating to their strike fund at cwa.org/ppg-donate. And I just heard someone shout, "We are one." That's right. We are one. Our union brothers, sisters, and siblings at Maximus are still fighting for a contract. And since you're in a giving spirit, because it is better to give than receive, journey over to cwa.org/CCW Solidarity Fund and help the workers and their families of Maximus. October is Breast Cancer Awareness Month, along with National Bullying Prevention Month, a moment that serves as a powerful reminder that there are steps as we all must take in looking out for our loved ones, the people in our community, and those who have been impacted. It's time to take one big step together and make change. Thank you to Ms. Kamika Shelby and the Nigel Shelby Foundation for being here this morning with us. And to learn more about the Nigel Shelby Foundation, donate or support the foundation, go to thenigelshelbyfoundation.org and secure your copies of A Need for Nigel and the journal, I Am Enough. An hour is not long enough to be with you, and a week is too long to be away from you. You have been tuned into the CWA Human Rights Justice Hour Power broadcast. I hope something you heard today has inspired you to take action toward creating positive change in the world. Every person has the power to make a difference, no matter how small. And by working together, we can create a world where human rights are respected and valued. So I encourage each of you in the listening audience to reflect on your role in promoting human rights, to effect change in your communities and beyond. Know that you are not alone in your quest for a more just and equitable world. When faced with injustice, it can be easy to lose hope and give up. But remember, justice may be slow like the truth, but when it finally comes, it will stand. Until next Thursday, 10 a.m. Central Standard Time, right here on KYOK 1140 a.m. and the all-new 106.5 FM, KYOKradio.org. See you next week. And remember, there is power in the ballot.
You have been tuned to the CWA Civil Rights Talk Show, An Hour of Power. Heard each week right here in the legendary KYOK, 1140 a.m. and the all-new 106.5 FM. See you this week for the legendary KYOK, Hour of Power.